Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy, customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify's made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
Welcome back to the Advisor. I am so excited. JP is back. He is the man who created the Blink Factor, and he just released the new book in the same name, explaining the phenomenon of sales marketing and how to construct that Blink Factor. You don't even think, you just purchase. If you've scrolled Amazon, if you've shopped with Lululemon, all those powerful brands, you understand this, but he breaks it down in 7 tenets to make you understand it even better. How powerful. So it is so good to see you again. Really excited to get into 10 of 7. All of this is just amazing. How are you doing today?
Fantastic, Lisa. And again, thank you for having me on your show. And I'm excited about sharing tenet number 7. And then maybe just for those who may be joining for the first time, I'd recommend that you visit previous blogs where we've covered previous tenets. In the previous blog, we covered tenet number 5 and 6. And 5 was about creating a sense of belonging, really understanding that we are human beings, that we need human connection, and how brands play an important role at facilitating those human connections. And tenet number 6 is what gets done. How do you measure emotional equities? You know, it's so much easier today than it was 10 years ago of understanding how people feel, their sentiment, their moods. And those are important factors when you're trying to engage with a respondent. You know, it's really hard to have a conversation if the individual you're having a conversation with has a high degree of anxiety or anger. And so understanding how they feel and how you make them feel is really important. And that's what separates leading brands versus lagging brands, is they've really figured out how to connect emotionally and how to measure those emotional connections. And now tenet number 7 is anchored on future-proofing what you're doing. The reality, if you look back 5 years ago, there was no conversation about AI. Yes, maybe in the movies, Terminator or something like that. But when it came to the day-to-day dialogue of individuals, AI was not even on their horizon. But all of a sudden, within 2 years, you can't go from one industry to the other, one blog to the other, that AI is not being mentioned. If you look at LinkedIn and if you did a search on how many times AI is mentioned on LinkedIn, it's like in the millions. And so future-proofing is understanding what are near-term horizon and future horizons, and what are those scenarios that would impact a company's, an organization or a brand. If you look today—
Like predicting the future in a sense?
Yeah, predicting the future, at least creating, no one can predict the future. There's a great quote I love though. It says the future is already here. It's just not evenly distributed. So when I go to China or I go to Europe and I look at what's happening there, and it's not happening in North America, you can learn from them. They're further ahead on certain things, further behind on other things. But really it is about predicting the future or creating scenarios that allow you to plan for the future. We call that scenario planning, and it's called strategic foresight, which is an entire discipline. It was invented by the military in the Second World War, where they're planning on, cause and effect. How do we allocate troops to certain areas? Having different scenarios. If the enemy does this, this is what we need to do. If the enemy does that, this is what we need to do. And that became the foundation that Shell pioneered strategic foresight for organizations, like how to plan if there's a shortage of resources. How do we plan if people are moving from gas turbine to electric? What implication does the organization? How do we mitigate any risk or liability? And so it could be on the simpler scale. If you're running your own organization and you're a consultant on well-being, how do you future-proof your organization? What are the trends? Consumers are getting older. If you're focused on the Gen Zs and the younger generation, you may be missing an entire market where they're looking for longevity. And where do you play in that longevity model? And so scenario planning looks at trends that are short-term horizon, like 5 years, and then long-term horizon could be 10 years, and then creating different scenarios. What happens if there's a global war? What happens if the cost of electricity is doubled? What happens if there's no more oil? These are all scenarios that allow organizations to plan. Okay, if this happens, here's our strategy. Here's scenario one if that happens. Scenario two, if that happens, here's our strategy. And it creates a playbook that allows organizations to anticipate disruption. And that's the key word, anticipate disruption, because no one likes to be disrupted. We, for example, predicted COVID a year, 18 months before it happened. We do every year a trends analysis on our website, www.sld.com. If you go, you'll see this year's predictions. We predicted 18 months prior that COVID happened that there'd be a pandemic. We thought it was going to be the bird flu. That's the only thing we got wrong. But we said, as organizations, how do you mitigate the risk? We had already started planning on remote work before COVID happened. We were already doing remote work before COVID happened. We already built an infrastructure and technology platform that allowed us to work from home and make it seem seamless well before COVID ever happened. So when COVID happened, all we did say stay home. That was it. They already had their computers at home. They already had their networks already set up, their
Every
servers.
organization that wasn't prepared is so jealous right now.
And we wrote a white paper like the day that COVID happened. We did a study and wrote a white paper like within 4 weeks.
God,
Here's
that's
what our
incredible.
yeah. So why is that relevant to Think Blink and the Blink Factor? It's because there's obviously world events that you need to anticipate, but also need to anticipate where's the future of emotional connections? What are the future technologies? AI didn't exist. Well, it existed, but 5 years ago wasn't relevant or topical. What are the future technologies that are going to allow us, and different scenarios are going to allow us to create more intimate relationships? Yesterday we had an AI workshop internally looking at what are the new AI trends, and there was this avatar, voice activated avatar, AI avatar. It was mind blowing. You could not tell that this was not a real human, and this avatar remembered the conversation you had the day before. They remembered who you were, the conversation you had, and were able to give you some of the traits of your personality. Oh, you're very inquisitive. I think you like a sense of discovery, and you go, wow, this is amazing. And so think of that now, and think of that, machine learning is all about learning. The machine learns from interactions. Now think about 5 years from now. What is it going to look
Gonna
like?
be insane. Gonna be insane. I use chat, the paid version of ChatGPT, to track everything. It knows, it feels like my best friend. And I don't know if that's healthy or not, but it knows what I'm doing, when I'm doing, what I need, what my body needs, based on, because I tell it everything. Every morning I tell it my dreams. I tell it where I'm at in my cycle. And it like speaks to me, like I said, like my best friend.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Well,
it's
one
insane.
of the ten, the sixth tenet, or the fifth tenet was belonging experience. Now, think today we think of belonging as human interaction between humans, but with the advance of avatars, they're talking now in the healthcare industry that we consult in. They're creating avatars to keep elderly people company. They're looking at robots
Wow,
as
that's brilliant.
companions, so that people don't, who are retired or who, are widowers, who live alone, have a companion that they can engage with, because that's key to longevity. Longevity is how you feel about yourself and how you engage in the community. And so having those both voice activated avatars and robotics are key to us living longer as human beings. And so as marketers understanding how does these technology impact our ability to connect emotionally, and is the definition of emotions going to change? Our definition now is based on history. Well, what does history look like 5 years from now? Right? What
Right.
behavior we're going to have 5 years from now? And how different it's going to be? It's going to be very different.
Yeah. Wow. How did people manage in the past to follow these trends without all of these brilliant enhancements in the world?
A lot of people, I mean, the old model of trend analysis is data scanning. So they would scan newspapers and magazines. We used to do a word search. Literally, we would look at the magazines. What words get repeated over and over again? What trends are in, fashion magazines, business magazines, automotive? All of those are intertwined, right? Because they reflect the human being and where the human being aspires to be. And so that's really important to understand that. But it was very manual. It was absolutely, I mean, the web helped. Google obviously opened up horizon being able to searches. But AI now allows you to go online and say, how many times was this word mentioned? Or what are the top ranking terms today happening through the media today? And AI allows you to do that. So, and then,
Is that where the hashtag comes in now? The word that's pulled and used multiple times and then it's highlighted.
yeah.
So I'm so interested. What would a word tell you in a word search like 30 years ago in a newspaper?
I would tell you, here's the things that are being mentioned. And you would look at fringe magazines and fringe and looking at what they're saying and seeing how those. And then the job of a strategic foresight scientist is to do the correlation, we call it connecting the dots, between those words, pictures that are happening in the marketplace, which ones are established trends, like anti-smoking was an established trend. Where's that going to lead to? And to vaping, right? You're not going to eliminate smoking. You're just going to change the behavior to a different platform, right? Or the use of cannabis or marijuana. And so looking at those early signals and determining, are these early signals the beginning of a major trend, or are they just fads, things that are like people buying pet rock and I would say, or meme stocks right now, they're a fad. They're a fad. They're not sustainable as a model. They're, people investing in these, $10, $20 stocks, or $1 stocks, they're not sustainable. They're just people capitalizing on something that is not a long-term trend. Is cryptocurrency when it started? You'd look at cryptocurrency, say, 30 years ago when it started, people say, oh, that's a fad. That's not sustainable. And look, it's a trend. The shift of paper currency to digital currency has been going on. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, Norway and Poland, you cannot use conventional currency. It's all digital currency now.
There are some things you'll never understand. Like, why did that person ghost me? When did man spreading become socially acceptable? And how come that dinosaur theme park keeps reopening given its safety record? But some things you can understand, like your Experian credit score. The more you improve your score, the more you could save on things like credit cards, car loans, mobile contracts, and more. It's dead easy to check and completely free. Download the Experian app and check your score today.
Interesting.
Or is that going to be 10 years from now?
I don't know. I have no idea. Do you? I feel like when did you discover your like strategic mind? Because I feel like you can see things way into the future. I'm not saying you can predict the future, but were you like this from birth? Like, was it just something you were interested in?
Yeah, it is. I mean, my dad was in the Air Force. I grew up on a Air Force base in Germany for the first 7 years of my life. And my dad was in electronics. When he left the Air Force, he opened his own electronic retail selling televisions, so black and white TVs.
Oh,
Yeah.
cool.
So I was always gravitating towards, I still remember for Christmas, my father bought me this beautiful tank. And I was at my grandfather's place. And they left me alone, and I borrowed a screwdriver and I took the tank apart. I didn't want to play with the tank the way it was. I wanted to find out how did the tank work. And so I have this inquisitive mind, always looking at why did this happen? How does this work? I love watching YouTubes on how to build a house or how to fix this because it intrigues me. But the reality is designers' innate quality is to envision the future. Strategic foresight may have started at Shell in the 50s, but design has been doing that for the last century. Clients come to us and say, please, the ask is ultimately is please envision what the future looks like. And we create different scenarios when we develop our physical environments. Here's evolution to revolution, right? And then we get input from consumers because what they see is what they believe in or what they can understand. And why that's important from a think blink is having those visuals help consumers connect emotionally with what you're trying to communicate, because a picture connects emotionally much more than rationally. And so future-proofing is about connecting the images and the stories to this future state and finding out which future state is the most relevant to them now and which ones would create disruption in their lives. And that helps us plan for the future.
Can you give us like a real life example of someone who does that brilliantly, just so we can kind of see it?
I would say the technology, obviously the technology companies, if you think of Amazon, if you think of Apple, if you think of Google, they're always testing things like Google Glasses. I mean, they launched Google Glasses, I think 15 years ago or 12 years ago,
Really?
right? It failed. It
Wow.
failed. And no one wanted them. They couldn't figure out what it was.
Was it
We
because of
launched.
the wrong time?
Yeah, exactly. But they were testing and learning what how would consumers use it? What are the barriers to usage, right? And then you just keep on adding those insights and fine-tuning it. We launched the ColecoVision, the Atom computer,
Oh
40
my
years
gosh.
at the same time as the Apple Macintosh, and people say, "What do you need a computer for? Like, how this is great, but what am I going to use it for?"
Right.
Like today, we look back and go, wow, that's a dumb question, right? And
Yeah.
understanding. So, technology companies have done a really good job. But I would say the energy organizations, companies who have long-term investments that are at risk. So, energy, oil, gas, even the natural resources, because they're finite, right? Sooner or later, we're going to run out of those resources. How does the world live without them? So they have a lot more at risk than if I'm trading up my iPhone to the new version, right? And so those organizations who are mostly at risk of being disrupted are the ones that put the most value in future-proofing and looking at strategic foresight.
Some of big of this, what are I'll try that again. What are some of the biggest challenges that these strategic planners are facing in prediction? And what are their strategic planner, what are they actually called?
Well, I would say the biggest challenge is human behavior.
Okay.
Because what people say in research is not what they do in real life.
Oh my God, you're so right. Yeah.
And I call it the irrational behavior. And that's, again, back to your emotional connections. When people act emotionally, they act often irrationally. Why did you buy that car? That car was $20,000 more than the other car. Why did you buy that? Now, they'll talk about the resale value of the car and the performance and the craftsmanship and all this blah blah blah.
Yeah.
Because that car makes me look sexy, or that car makes me look smarter. That car makes me look I've achieved something in life. That's the key reason. And so understanding the irrational consumer and how to gauge their behavior in the future is the biggest challenge.
Yeah, because people who don't deliver on what they're spewing, they lose trust immediately. Immediately, it's gone. If you don't deliver what you say, what you're promising, and you get the item, what is that place that's selling stuff? And when it comes, it's like miniature, and people are like, what is this? Like no one's gonna buy from them again, right? Only maybe to find the humor in it and get like a mini whatever you're ordering. But it's that delivery on the promise and the connection to that. But yeah, people just they act a certain way in that scenario, and then in real life, it's completely different.
Absolutely. And so being able to predict the future based on those uncontrollable. And that's where the growth of behavioral science. We have on staff a behavioral scientist, and it's called nudging. So what are the biases people have, and how do we nudge them out of their biases? How do we get them to buy that? Sears, rest her soul, pioneered behavioral science, because when you went to a Sears store, they had good, better, best. If you wanted an iron, they had the budget version, they had the best-selling version, and then they had the deluxe version, and then they had different prices. And consumers always bought the middle one because some bought the more premium, but typically you wouldn't, in your mind, you'd go, if I buy the discount one or the value one, I'm giving up certain features I'm not willing to give up that I'm getting in the middle one. Now, I like the features of the deluxe one, but I'm willing to compromise with this one. And that's how they drove their business, by giving consumers three choices, of which they knew the choice the consumer was going to pick was the middle one, through behavioral science. Because we're more apt to react to something, a fear of not getting versus a fear of getting, of losing out. The fear of losing out is more powerful than the fear of winning, or the desire of winning. And so understanding those behaviors helps guide this strategic foresight, if you like, with some of the behaviors consumers may have based on these situations, these scenarios that we've created, these short-term scenarios and long-term scenarios, disruptive scenarios and non-disruptive scenarios, and looking at how will the consumer respond and what are the strategies we need to take to remain emotionally connecting with those consumers in those purchase decisions. Because when you're giving consumers choice, those choice, two things happen. You've narrowed the choice, so you're eliminating complexity of choice, because right now people are overwhelmed. There's too much choice. When you go to Amazon, you're overwhelmed. God, I just wanted that. I didn't need to see 30 toasters. And number two is, by narrowing the choice, you're putting the consumer in control of making the decision they feel is right for them. And that's all about those emotional connection, and empathy for their needs, understanding their desires, and playing to those desires.
The Sears catalog, the Christmas wish book, mine was so dog-eared. I would look forward to that every year. But that's a brilliant way of predicting the future that they had down pat, because they could see the trends. And then, oh God, I can smell that wish book right now.
So here's a great insight. So here's a company, Sears, that started in the catalog business. They started in catalog. They had no stores, and then they went into retail catalog. They're like Blockbuster. They didn't see the writing on the wall that the catalog was the key vehicle in their future, but that the catalog format had to change from paper being delivered to your home to online, Amazon, right? They didn't make that switch. And I have this saying, your biggest asset for growth is your biggest liability for growth. So their biggest asset was their catalog program. They had the best products, the best selection of any retailer in the world. Their biggest liability is they were committed to a paper delivered to your home catalog, thinking that was the future. When Amazon came in and said, no, just go online, you can order it there.
They put the big squash on that, that's for sure. Yeah, crazy. I wish we could continue talking about this, but we're almost out of time. Thank you so much for being here, for explaining Tenet 7 and everything that goes along with it. It's such a story. You have this brilliant way of painting the story so well. So thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Lisa. And I look forward to the final session where we're going to talk a little bit about how do you take all these insights, these tenets, and apply it to your business.
Oh, I'm excited. I can't wait. And I know the audience is excited too. So thanks again. And to our audience, thank you for being here. Stay tuned for the rest, and go back and listen and watch the rest of these episodes that we did, because we thoroughly go through tenets 1 through 6, and it's brilliant. Have a good day, everyone. Bye.
Thank you.